Thank
Thank
you.
you, Lynn. We will not be passing a basket today because this workshop is put on by District 5. If you contribute money to your home group and your group contributes to the district, you have already helped to pay for this event. Thank you for supporting District 5. Let's begin with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Do we have any new people with us today in your first, second, or third AA meeting ever? If so, raise your hand. All right. This workshop will be 90 minutes total. Our presenter today is Billy N. from the Tell It Like It Is group in Palm Beach, Florida. Billy is a past delegate and also a past general service trustee. Billy will be sharing his experience today with sponsorship, 12-step calls, and the chapter Working with Others. At 7 o'clock, we will be entertaining Q&A. Please send your questions to Carrie through the chat feature during the presentation, and we will have Billy answer your questions during the second half of tonight's workshop. Before I turn the floor over to our speaker, I would like to give an opportunity for district officers to make any necessary announcements at this time.
Welcome, everybody, to the District 5 workshop, the first one of 2022. I am currently serving you as your District 5 DCM. So I hope everybody enjoyed a little bit of music. We're going to have some fun today. We got a great speaker, and hopefully everybody will participate in some of the Q&A. And I see some committee chairs here. So yay! I'm going to shut up and let the committee chairs take the floor.
Any committee chairs, please raise your hand so we can unmute you if you have any announcements. Go ahead, Ron.
Thank you very much, Jamie. I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic, and I am the D5 CPC chair. Hey, just real quick, our 12-step carrying the message. This is from the service manual, AA's Legacy of Service. Carrying the message is the basic service that AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society for alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die. So just a real quick, if you don't know, CPC came into being in 1970. It was an outgrowth of public information. CPC, by the way, is cooperation with the professional community. Sorry about that. It's an activity that's separate from public information, treatment, or corrections work, but sometimes they overlap. Members of the CPC committees inform, we inform professionals and future professionals about AA, what we are, where we are, what we can do, and particularly what we can't do. We attempt to establish better communication between AAs and professionals to find a simple, effective way of cooperating without affiliating. It's really about allowing AA to be in places that it's not right now, in doctor's offices, in lawyer's offices. It's, you know, we suffered so much getting in here, and yet we met so many professionals, and we weren't guided. So it's sort of that kind of education. So I have the first thing we're going to do is I've got about enough stuff. I'm just this short of having enough to build about 200 to 250 health professional packets that are going to go out through the most powerful vehicle that we have for educating our professionals, and that is each and every one of us taking a pamphlet to our healthcare professionals. So I'm going to have those available here shortly. As soon as I get the stuff in, we're going to have I'm going to try to make it a party, a packet making party. And then if you're interested in being a part of District 5 CPC committee, or being your home, especially this, I like this, being your home group CPC PI liaison, feel free to email me. I'll put my information if I can in the chat, and I'll let you know when the next meeting is coming up shortly. Thank you for letting me be of service. This is a blast.
Thanks, Ron. And my name is Jamie, and I am an alcoholic serving as your alternate district committee member currently. I wanted to announce 2 weeks from today is the in-person Grapevine and Archives workshop, and we do need volunteers. So I'm going to tell you what we need. We need a setup, cleanup chair, 3 setup cleanup crew and 3 total, 2 greeters, ticket person for the free drawing, book and prize table person, and a speaker host. We ask that you be, it's at the library, downtown Bend. We ask that you be there at 1:30, and anyone who attends gets a raffle ticket, and anyone who is a service will get 2. Please send me or Carrie a chat with your name, well, not your name, but your number and your email so we can get you signed up. Thank you.
Thanks. There you go, unmuted. Hey, everyone, I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Tell It Like It Is group. I do understand that this is an event put on by a district. I know, therefore, that usual and customary to list someone's service position. However, I just want to make clear that the topics tonight, which are awesome, are recovery related, mostly, not service. A little bit of service in there. But I don't want any new person to believe that just because I'm a trustee or a delegate that has anything to do with, you know, being better at the topics I'm talking about tonight. It is interesting. I believe, if I'm correct, I'm supposed to spend half my time on 12-step calls and half my time on sponsorship. And then I will try to do that. It's funny because I said the other night at a service workshop that this is a busy time of year for people that are involved in the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're a area that is a panel 72, you just elected new officers. If you're an area that's panel 71, you started your second year. And now we're in the middle of conference agenda item season. And that's a busy time for area delegates and area officers and districts and everything else. And, you know, my only, you know, suggestion is to not forget about your recovery during that time. The subjects we're talking about tonight are never a part-time job in Alcoholics Anonymous. That, in my just humble opinion, you cannot be an effective servant in Alcoholics Anonymous at any level unless it is part of your normal life that you run into new people who are coming into AA. Where they're coming into from, whether you're meeting them in meetings or detoxes or treatment centers or correctional facilities, it doesn't matter, but that you are in contact with new people that are coming in today, because otherwise, if all you're talking to is people who are like, been here a while, it is easy to forget what it is like to come in new. There's a saying that I love about a particular spiritual illness that invades the ego of alcoholics who are recovered. And that illness is described as too many years and not enough days. And too many years and not enough days is when you lose the ability to empathize or, you know, be understanding about the person that's coming in. One of the notes that I have written in my big book on the last page, on page 88, on the last page of interaction, right across from the opening page of working with others, is just a note to myself that says, the only person who can convince someone that they're hopeless is someone who's been equally hopeless. I mean, that is just a fact of life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes I think it's easy to forget about these things, that statement, because we hear a lot of things in AA. And sometimes the wrong things become popular to say. And sometimes even worse than becoming popular, the wrong things sound good in meetings. And when someone hears one thing in a meeting and it sounds good and they know they go to, I mean, let's talk about honestly AA sometimes. You know, you go to a meeting, you don't normally go to that meeting. Nobody that goes to your normal meetings are there, and you hear somebody say something that gets a good reaction from the crowd. And so you can't wait to take that back to where you go to meetings so that you can get the same reaction. But sometimes that is very dangerous. Sometimes we say things in AA that are not very helpful, or we don't explain it well enough. I actually had a very good day today. Not that you care, has nothing to do, but I was at an AA event, and I said something that I say all the time, which is, let's stop putting down other fellowships. And I haven't been at an in-person event, a workshop like this in a while, but I've said that statement before, but the crowd went kind of nuts when I said it, like a huge roar of applause. And later on, when I asked a couple of people who came up to talk to me later on, it is because I'm in a particular part of the country that is currently devastated with another issue besides alcohol. And they were telling me they were so happy to hear a past AA trustee talk well about other fellowships, because particularly Narcotics Anonymous and Drug Addicts Anonymous have just grown really well in these areas. And they have really active people with a lot of time who are working with new people. And, you know, I'm going to talk about some things tonight that have to do with that. So I'm going to deal with 12-step calls first. Or what we, 12-step calls is an interesting group of words together. Because we hear from old timers, there's no 12-step calls today. And we hear, and I'm going to try to stay away from that kind of rhetoric of there are no 12-step calls today, or people don't call AA for 12-step calls. Maybe it's not the same as it was 50 years ago. I'm not debating that. But I think we should maybe all define a 12-step call as not by the person who is receiving it, but by you that is giving it. And if that is your first contact with someone who is relatively new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that you should be looking at it as a 12-step call. I mean, I know we all see the man on the bed and we all think, well, I'm not in a hospital, I'm not sitting with another man or woman, and I'm not in their house in the middle of the night. But I just want to make clear that a lot of 12-step calls happen in the parking lots of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. A lot. There are a lot of people who end up in our meetings and groups who have no experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, who don't know what AA is or what AA isn't. A lot of people who've been directed to come to our meetings, maybe inadvertently, or not properly, or some properly. But I don't think that just because the world has changed, that we should lessen our responsibility regarding introducing someone to Alcoholics Anonymous. Many people's lives have been saved in the parking lots of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is actually why I'm so glad that in-person AA is coming back. Obviously, I'm on digital right now, and I'm not opposed to digital. But I just got to be very honest with you that there is nothing like an AA member noticing something strange or odd about somebody they know or somebody they've never seen before, that it just, they get a feeling in their gut that something just isn't right. And after the meeting, that person is walking out into the parking lot, and an AA member might say simply as simple as, "Hey, Billy." They didn't even say, "Rarely have we seen a person fail." They didn't say, "War fever ran high." They just said, "Hey." And it is amazing how many lives have been changed by a simple hello in a parking lot. And so the duty that's on the AA member that's been here longer, we can talk about if you get a 12-step call from however it's done, wherever you live. Maybe it was came from a relative. Maybe it came through a central office or in a group. And maybe you really are going to see someone who asked to see people in AA. If that's the case, I would definitely then just throw on the tip, but just don't do it alone, please. And please take someone else with you. And please realize that a 12-step call is not sponsorship. It could lead into that, but it is different. I personally believe that your only job on a 12-step call is to let that person know that you have been equally as hopeless, that you have been in the same spot. The first 12-step call really took place in a gatehouse on Mother's Day of 1935. And that is when Bill W. met Dr. Bob for the first time in a meeting that was only supposed to be like 15 minutes. But that meeting wound up going a couple hours. And I think there are hints and suggestions in working with others that are good in sponsorship, but also good in 12-step calls, specifically good in 12-step calls, in that you do not talk about them. You do not question them like it's an interrogation. You do not try to pre-certify them or pre-qualify them for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those are not our jobs. Our real job is to talk about ourselves. Our real job is to let that person know that we have been in the same place in our life. Our real job is to talk about our drinking so that they realize the Me Too moment, that they realize that, wow. Because remember, people like us, most of us have been involved in conversations with people long before we get to AA. We tend to attract the attention of certain groups of people in society. Social workers, counselors, probation officers, guidance counselors, employee assistance counselors, just people like us, the way we live, we naturally seem to, our actions sometimes get us involved in conversations. And a lot of those conversations, people are always talking about my problems and me and what I did wrong or what I need to improve or what I need to stop doing. I could go on and on. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we stay away from that, especially initially. My focus is supposed to be me. Why am I out here in the parking lot or in your house or in a park? Why am I here talking to you? Well, number one, because I'm a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only way I get to keep this gift is by giving it away. Whether you want to receive it or not is optional. And I think that's important to remember when working with new people, that if they don't like what you have to say, that is completely their opinion. They're entitled to it. But that doesn't change how good it is for us to do it. Obviously, in today's world, and I think we all know this, because it was a voicemail message, not a text. So, you know, it was old school, right? Somebody sent me an actual voicemail message, but I'm curious, I'm guessing, has anyone here answered the phones at Intergroup or central office or your hotline? If you have, just raise your hand in the air. I'll be able to see it. Just your regular hand. Okay. So a lot of things we learn answering phones is when someone else calls for an alcoholic. When they call and say, my son really needs help. Or my wife really needs help, or my father really needs help. Except we're Alcoholics Anonymous, not Al-Anon family groups and Alateen. So we deal with alcoholics when they need help. We can't be running around just because someone else has determined someone else has a problem. We are not like an advertising service for Alcoholics Anonymous. And in today's world, people could have a multitude of problems. So I just want to be very clear, when you go out on a 12-step call or wherever it happens to be taking place, please be open-minded that that person might have been sent to AA and they should have been sent someplace else. But that doesn't mean you should be any less kind or compassionate to that person. Compassion is not out of style in 2022. We should always be compassionate and we should always be kind. And we should not blame anyone who comes to AA because someone else sent them there. Sometimes I think it's insane in AA that we want someone with 3 days to act like they have 3 years. If they have 3 days, they have 3 days. We don't compete with other 12-step fellowships. In fact, we're all in the same army for however you consider your higher power or God. We're all out doing God's work. We don't need to make sure that, oh, you have to come to AA. No, we should all be open-minded that maybe the person needs to go somewhere else. Or they need to come to AA. Or maybe they need to go to both. But we should just be open-minded and compassionate. I also want to talk about the word cooperation. If we're answering calls or you get, I mean, a lot of 12-step calls today that I get, I do not get from an intergroup or a central office. A lot of them I get from someone I know who knows someone. And the first question I have to ask is, do they want help? Do they want help? Because I'm not in the business of interfering in other people's lives. If they do want help, and then I then talk to them, sometimes it'll be a phone call before I meet them. And it's, you know, super important to kind of gain their confidence and trust. And that's hard to do because they're like me. They trust nobody. And that's hard to do. And I want to stress that with new people and share from my own experience. It doesn't matter whether their spouse or their parent or their sibling is the one who put you in contact with them. The minute you accept an assignment, and it is an assignment, to talk to a person who might need help in Alcoholics Anonymous, your loyalty lies with one person only. And that is that person who needs help. It is super imperative that they know. And sometimes people, they get offended by this. But it is not your job to call them back and say, oh, they wouldn't do this or they wouldn't do that. Or the new person needs to know that not only have you been equally as hopeless, but that you have some loyalty to them. You're not some kind of internal affairs. You're not some kind of family therapist who reports back. Nope. You're on the side of the alcoholic who's dying. That is who you owe your loyalty to. It is not wrong if you recommend another fellowship to somebody, but I would hope that you would take them there. I would hope that you took the time out of your life, if you had time to meet with them, that you have time to talk to them. And I hope that you know other people in other fellowships. You know, someone asked me a question today. It's not in the same vein, but related. Is someone was talking to me today that they handle a meeting at a local correctional facility. Now, local correctional facilities are different than prisons in that a lot of those people are in and out constantly. The people who are in a local prison are completely always changing daily, weekly, monthly. They are not people who are there for long periods of time. And so meetings in correctional facilities are often like a 12-step call. In local correctional facilities, often there is someone there who's never been to AA before. And this person was telling me today that they have a meeting that they handle. And on average, there are 15 new people every week. There's 15 people that weren't there the week before. That's like a massive 12-step call. 15 people who may have not been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous before, who are now all of a sudden in your meeting this week that weren't here last week. And they were telling me about how many people are in there who say they're not alcoholics. Some say they've never drank. And they told me that they were told by someone in AA that they're not allowed to talk to someone in another fellowship about this. So I want to clear that up as well. Whether you're dealing in personal recovery on a one-on-one 12-step call, or whether you're going to a treatment center or a local correctional facility where there's a lot of people who are at their first AA meeting, it is perfectly suggested and acceptable in today's world that you know the people in the other fellowships that have that job. In other words, who's the corrections chair for Narcotics Anonymous in your county? And if you're telling me that a lot of people at that AA meeting are saying they don't need to be there or they never drank, there's nothing wrong with you giving a call to the chair of Narcotics Anonymous or Heroin Anonymous, or whichever one, and saying, hey, maybe you want to talk to the local sheriff. I've ran into a lot of people in my meeting that are not saying they need Alcoholics Anonymous, but they need another fellowship. Sometimes we get so our ownership and our pride and our ego. And in fact, the person I talked to today, someone had told them that it's against the traditions to contact someone else in another fellowship. And I was like, what tradition is that? We cooperate with everyone. We just don't affiliate. But it breaks my heart that things like that happen. Inside working with others, I believe that if you were to lay down the doctor's opinion over working with others, they're pretty much the same chapter. The doctor's opinion really talks about the medical estimate of alcoholism, but they really are hand in hand, work so well together. There's a couple of lines in working with others that are super important, both 12-step call and sponsorship, but I'll focus on 12-step call now. The one line that I love the most, let me just find it quickly. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Securing their confidence is what I talked about them knowing you're trustworthy and loyal, and you're there for them, not their family. Now, if you do have a lot of contact with newcomers, make sure you have the information for Al-Anon family groups. I had a mother call me this week. That was the message I was talking about. You know what that message was? Hi, Billy. You don't know me. I met your friend Courtney at a meeting. My son is 24 years old. He drinks way too much. He's having lots of problems. I really think he needs AA. And Courtney gave me your number and maybe you could give him a call. That was the message. Now, I called her back, but I had to ask her some questions. First of all, does your son want help? Because a 12-step call is not an intervention. We don't do interventions in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is an outside issue. Other people do interventions. We do not. I also had to tell her, and I talked to her a little bit to find out a little bit about her. And I said, I'm glad to hear that you're 4 years sober. But if your son's drinking is affecting you this much, you might want to try a meeting of Al-Anon family groups, because they are the experts in this situation. They have a program that's geared around this. I said, now, if you call your son and he's willing to talk to me and you tell me he wants help, I will gladly call him. But I'm just saying, you just have to be ready to have conversations. And this is why it's so important to have a sponsor. So important, if you go meet somebody in person, to be with someone else. It says, so cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. And then it says, when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. And then it has one of the most important lines that I think is in the entire big book. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste your time to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. They should be patient, realizing they are dealing with a sick person. The problem is, I mean, when you turn on the TV set, it seems in today's day and age, you're either going to become an expert on crime scene investigation or interventions, right? I mean, at any one time on TV, you can watch like 10 shows and become an expert on blood spatter patterns or interventions. And I think one of the confusion things out there for families is that they don't know any better. And they confuse us with an intervention service. Because if some of you know or have been in contact with professionals, this is not, they do not believe if you don't want to stop drinking, don't try to persuade him. Please realize that a lot of the family members you're dealing with, they've been just turning on the TV, watching like 10 family members in a living room try to persuade someone to stop drinking. Who doesn't want to stop? Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. We just don't do that. That's not Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, I'll read the line. If he does not want to stop drinking, you don't waste your time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for the family also. And then it says this. If there is any indication he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife, parent, spouse, friend. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his place to see how you would like to be approached if the tables were turned. So in other words, working with others right here is not really talking about sponsorship yet. It's talking about your first interaction with an alcoholic. It's talking about first meeting them. Maybe you wind up being a sponsor, maybe you don't. It says sometimes it's a waste. Sometimes it is wise to wait till he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it is better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of a spree or at least for a lucid interval. Then let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he wants to go to any extreme to do so. So again, that does he want to quit for good? Does she want to quit for good? Are they looking for like a couple of maybe days off from drinking and a visit to the oxygen bar, right? I mean, how many pictures do I have to see on social media of people that I know in my own private life who are like at some oxygen bar because they say they were out all night last night? Like, that's not what we're for. We're not the hangover recuperation business. We're in the business of people who are dying from alcoholism. But it goes on to say, and I believe, I have a note on page 91 of my big book, that the directions for a 12-step call are right there. They're right on page 91. It says, when your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. See your man alone. That does not mean you alone. That means whoever you are with, see them alone. Not with their wife, not with their parent. See your man alone. Engage in general conversation. It could be anything. Do you know, 2 years ago, I was in Angola State Prison on death row in the death house. They call it the death house. Big sign outside. Big American bald eagle, death house. Inside, 73 people on death row in Louisiana. Do you know that I went and I met with an AA member who's on death row? You know what we talked about? How hard it is to be a New York Knicks fan and how horrible they've been for so long. And do you know what broke the ice? Because him and I still communicate. Being a Knicks fan and a couple of our favorite 30 for 30 episodes, that's what broke the ice. So I love this line, engage in general conversation. Remember that most other people that people like us get into conversations with, they don't have time for general conversation. They get right to the point about, I'm a disaster. My life's a disaster. I need to stop doing certain things. Sometimes we forget about what it's like to be dying of alcoholism. And when the last time was that someone just wanted to have a conversation with us. Just a regular conversation. So it says, after a while, turn to some phase of drinking. Tell him about your drinking habits, your symptoms, and experiences to encourage to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing of the moment of how this was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. I'm trying to see if I have that book right in front of me. I do. You ever go to an open speaker meeting and someone says, I'm not going to tell you about my drinking. Not going to tell you a drunkalog. This is a great little book. The Best of Bill. The Grapevine publishes it. I want to read you one of Bill's stories in here. This is Bill W. speaking. Here is a recent example of the high cost of spiritual pride. A very tough-minded prospect was taken to his first AA meeting. The first speaker majored on his own drinking pattern. The prospect seemed impressed. The next two speakers, or maybe lecturers, each themed their talks on God as I understand him. This could have been good, but it wasn't. The trouble was their attitude, the way they presented their experience. They oozed arrogance. In fact, the final speaker got so overboard on some of his personal theological convictions. With perfect fidelity, they were both repeating my performance of years before. Quite unspoken, yet implicit in everything they said was the same idea. Folks, listen to us. We have the only true brand of AA. I love that little story from Bill. I think the problem has become that we redefine drunkologues. A drunkalogue isn't about how many cars you crashed or how much child support you owe or how many fights you had with the bouncer. The drunkalogue should be about the medical estimate of alcoholism, about what makes you an alcoholic, about your allergy to alcohol, about your mental obsession, about how many times you wanted to quit, about, you know, again, I want to talk about being compassionate. If we're honest about when most of us came to AA, AA has a lot of paradoxes. But I personally believe the worst one is that we usually need to stop drinking when we need to drink the most. That is what the big book calls the jumping off place. Life is crashing down all around us. And now you want me to stop doing the one thing that brings me at least some temporary relief. It then goes on to say, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to drive yourself to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned you were sick. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. I always say, yes, I'm interested in you're a friend of Bill's, but I'm more interested in if you're a friend of Fred or Jim's. Because if you're going to be able to properly work with new people, you need to know Fred and Jim in the chapter more about alcoholism. Those stories are so, they describe us so well. Because that's me. I just think I'm going to have, my brain tells me I'm uncomfortable in my own skin. My brain tells me the only way I feel comfortable is by having the first drink. Then my brain tells me that the allergy is a hoax. It's a conspiracy theory. It really doesn't exist. One drink does not make me get drunk. But that's what my crazy brain tells me when I'm sober. And then we might get to perhaps the most controversial line in the whole big book in today's Alcoholic Anonymous. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopelessness feature of the malady. So you have to know that they're a real alcoholic. Show him from your own experience the mental condition surrounding that first drink that prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book. Do not go to a 12-step call with two highlighters and a big book. Just let's get that right out in the open. No highlighters, no inventory sheets, no big book. Like, if you bring your book, keep it to the side, okay? Because later you're going to be able to use it to maybe ask them some magic questions to help them qualify. Don't brand them an alcoholic. Let them draw their own conclusions. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he's not alcoholic. But insist that if severely inflicted, there may be little chance to recover by himself. Continue to speak on alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of the body and mind which accompany it. In other words, the doctor's opinion. Do what Bill W. did with Dr. Bob. Now, sometimes people will say, well, you can help somebody who's not an alcoholic because the spiritual solution, it'll help them. And you've done steps 2 to 12. So you can help them do steps 2 to 12. Remember for yourself what it says in the foreword to the second edition of the Big Book. I will read that paragraph. This physician, meaning Dr. Bob, had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. Dr. Bob had been going to the Oxford group for a long time. But when the broker, that being Bill W., gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered up never to drink again. Sometimes we forget about, we have to focus on the hopeless nature of alcoholism, the medical estimate, the allergy, and the obsession. Somebody new to AA, I'll give you in order what they don't want to hear about. They don't want to hear about God, and they don't even care if religion isn't mentioned in the steps. As soon as they see the word God, they think religion. They do not want to hear about personal inventory. They definitely do not want to hear about making a list of everyone they owe an apology to. Yeah. Those things are not things that new people are excited to hear about. Okay? For most alcoholics that I've met, those 12 steps are about as opposite as their natural DNA is wired as possible. There couldn't be 12 more opposite principles than how most alcoholics operate. The only way to get them to want to do the steps is the whole convincing that they're hopeless, whether that's your sponsee or a 12-step call. It goes on to say this. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he may become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual future freely. If the man be atheist or agnostic, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use in arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. It goes on to talk about outlining the program of action, but I want to talk a little bit about practical suggestions in today's world. I believe the biggest, this is my own opinion, but it's based on my experience. When I read how AA used to be, and I read how AA is today, and the whole recovery world, I don't think that the biggest difference is that we don't get as many in-person 12-step calls. I think we talk about that. I think the biggest difference is most people we come in contact with, somebody has already filled their head about AA information that's not AA. They've already been in and out of contact with professionals or treatment centers or all kinds of places where somebody has told them their version of AA. And the reason I stress that, because I think in sponsorship today, it is so important to honor. You know how we always say we love that pamphlet and we love what is AA, what's not AA. And that's an important job of a sponsor. It's not just to take someone through the 12 steps. So I'm not here to tell you how long it takes to take someone through the 12 steps, okay? It's your own personal business. It's not my business. I'm just going to say this. For the average person I meet, we're not going to be writing a fourth step in the first month. That's just the average person I meet, okay? There's all different circumstances. But if this new person that I'm sponsoring is going to be going to AA, don't I have a responsibility besides taking them through the book to introducing them to Alcoholics Anonymous? And what's probably the one thing? Maybe you have a different answer, but for me, I know what my answer is. When I run into someone who's been in and out of every institution in the world and been to every kind of treatment possible, you know what the one thing I find no one has ever told them about? A home group. A home group. You know what they have learned about? Meetings. They have lots of forms in their car of lots of signatures for lots of meetings they went to, but no one ever took them the time to explain the difference between a meeting and a group, and then how important it is if they're going to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to have a home group, and why a home group is so important, and what happens at a home group. The average new person we meet today, we have to be compassionate to kind of help them unlearn everything they think they already know about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because people come to AA today, like I said, they can watch TV shows about people. And people come here with these preconceived notions. I am not, you know, listen. I think sponsorship is a very, very personal relationship. I do not believe that people walk in front or behind of others in AA. I believe we walk next to each other. I think when you're sponsoring someone, you've just been walking longer than them. That's it. You're not in front of them. You've just been walking the path a lot longer. And you know the pitfalls. You know that people like us, we don't like to stay on the road or the path. We can't help but go into the gravel a little bit. Even when we drive, we just love the gravel, right? And the gravel is supposed to wake us up a little bit, but then sometimes we go in a ditch. But that's why we have a sponsor, to kind of stay on the road And the other thing, you know, that I don't think it's talked about enough is the, regardless whether you're hearing their fifth step or not, and I'm not here to talk about that, but the awesome responsibility you hold in keeping their confidence. They need to know they can trust you. If you want them to succeed and you want them to be honest with you, they have to know they can trust you. They have to know that me sponsoring you is not a conversation I have with other people. They need to know that what you say to me is held in confidence. We're dealing with people like me who don't trust a lot of the world, don't trust a lot of people. So I just stress to really, really be super compassionate along those lines. I am not here to talk about a couple other topics, but one topic I want to talk about and then finish is this one. In 1980, something happened in AA. A lot of people, they hear about the Big Book Revolution. When did the Big Book Revolution start? Well, I can tell you when it started. It started in 1980 in New Orleans. 2 days before the International Convention, two men whose wives were in Al-Anon, who when they went to Al-Anon conventions while everyone was Al-Anoning, these two men would talk about their love of the Big Book. For the first time ever, these two men put on a huge workshop, and that was Joe and Charlie. And their lives were never the same after. They did that workshop, and their lives changed forever. And they were on the road all the time. And, you know, Don P. said a long time ago that one of the unintended consequences of the Big Book Revolution was how many First Legacy only members we have in Alcoholics Anonymous today. And so what I want to share with you as I close here is, I think most of us, if we're from Big Book sponsorship, have been taught that when you sit down with someone and I have my Big Book, that I'm going to ask you a question. And one of those questions is going to be, are you willing to go to any lengths? Because if you're not, there's a lot of other people dying who need help. But are you really willing to go to any lengths? But I've had to make sure I define any lengths now in AA today. And one of the ways I define it is that you don't just get to go through the Big Book. That when we're done going through the first 104 pages of the Big Book, specifically from the doctor's opinion and the forewords all the way to working with others, that we are going to immediately start going through the traditions. Now, hopefully by this time, I've been explaining the traditions to you the best I can, but we're really going to go through the traditions because I don't want to participate in polluting Alcoholics Anonymous, in sending someone out to educate everyone on the Big Book because they're on fire, but yet they know nothing about our second legacy. And I think it is super important for sponsors today. You don't have to be an expert in the concepts, but the traditions are so important. And all 12 of them can be found in the Big Book, even though it was written 16, 17 years before. But I want to create well-rounded AA members. But I also want them to remember this question, and this is what I'll end with. Where would they have gone if AA didn't exist? There's 70 people in this meeting right now. I would ask all of you, where would you have gone if AA didn't exist when you came to AA? Maybe you were just going through a drinking phase and your life would be okay today. That's not my story. I don't know what my life, I could make lots of predictions, but God knows how bad it would have been if there was no AA for me to come to. So when I explain to new people why it is so important that they learn the traditions, is because they benefited from AA still being here when they needed to come to AA. And the only thing that kept AA here was the traditions. Without them, we would have ended a long, long time ago. So that's all I have. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your dedication, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for your service to AA. Thank you for everything you do every day for alcoholics who are dying. It's always great to see so many active, enthusiastic people. So thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Billy.